The better part of the man is soon plowed into the soil for compost. By a seeming fate, commonly called necessity, they are employed, as it says in an old book.
So, what inspired you this novel, Abondance, about fatherhood and social issues?
Oh, that's a very interesting question to posit it both, you know, from the economic standpoint as well as the father relationship. And I think, you know, the initial interest was in the economics, and I wanted to focus on that. And I began with the organizational conceit of the novel, where every chapter is, you know, reflects how much money Henry has, you know, down to the last cent. And so this idea came first and actually started as a short story idea. And so I didn't actually have a character until I didn't have the character of Henry until I decided that this structural device would actually work nicely in a novel. And so once I gave myself the room to write a novel is where I decided to bring in the context of the generations and the relationships with fathers and sons. And I decided to have to give Henry a child much earlier than deciding to explore the relationship with Henry and his father, because I thought that it was necessary to give a character like Henry a child in this kind of a story, because in American society, when we discuss poverty, it's very, very common for people to dismiss the situation of poverty on the individual, right? It's a failure of individual responsibility. It's, you know, if he only needs to work harder and he can lift himself out of poverty, right? This is the common attitude in my country. And of course, I don't agree with this, but in order to preemptively combat this assumption, I thought a child cannot be blamed for poverty, for being born into this poverty. And so that was a way of not only, you know, forcing that type of attitude to be halted, you know, in terms of judging a child in this situation, it also was a very interesting narrative engine where I could explore how, you know, this father is going to do whatever means necessary to keep his little boy safe despite his economic situation. And by, you know, by studying the relationship with Henry's father, who's a Filipino man who is an immigrant, it was an access point for me to explore some of the experiences that I had with my own father and seeing how these kinds of macho, paternalistic Filipino attitudes influence the next generation and how they're going to treat their relationship with their own children, you know, from one generation to the next. So sorry, that was a very long answer. Please stop me if I'm going too long. Yes, blah, 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 all day.
Yes, no problem. But actually what you said was like you started with the idea. You didn't start with the plot itself and with a plan and with a structure. It's a little bit the characters and the plot itself that took you in a novel. Is that right?
Yes, it was the idea of, you know, studying how economic scarcity really will impact the individual, not only on a psychological and emotional place, but also in terms of really limiting and constraining a person's autonomy, how limited their options are when they don't have the money to explore different avenues besides survival in the most bare and essential sense of the word.
And is it a reality in the United States now? Because in France we have, well, less and less, but we still have this very idealistic vision of the USA where everything is okay and is going well. But it started a few years with some old people who live in vans and don't stay in their house. What you describe is abundance is a reflect of a reality.
Yes, I believe the most recent statistic that I saw about childhood poverty. That's not talking about necessarily people who are living without a home, but you know, the number of children who goes to sleep hungry in America is 1 out of 5.
Oh,
you know, yes. That's 20%. So this is a very big number for a country as rich as the United States. And I find it unacceptable. As far as, you know, people who, especially people who are experiencing homelessness, the statistics are difficult to track because they, you know, the situation fluctuates so much, particularly when we look at evictions, similar as to what happened with Henry at the end of Abundance, where, you know, people will find a house and then not be able to afford the rent and be kicked out again. And so there it's not necessarily as long of a period as Henry and Junior are experiencing, which is 6 months, is how long they have been without a home in the novel. But it's tragically a more and more familiar situation that is affecting more and more children. But I don't have the actual statistics on homelessness per se, but the hunger is commonplace, which is unacceptable.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And do you think that literature has the power to inform and show us a reality we don't really face, we maybe not really know, and in a way that news magazines or nonfiction will not necessarily reach us?
I think they all serve their function to inform the public of these kinds of situations. I think, you know, journalism is probably the most essential in terms of just making the public aware of the scope of situations. You know, there's so much going on in the world, but I think literature in particular is a very unique medium for readers who are interested in learning about the in-depth experience of these various social phenomena that is in the world around them, but they may not be able to, that they haven't had direct contact with. And so that's one of, you know, you can see it in cinema and, you know, film and television series as well. But I think the giving the, you know, to inhabit a human mind like literature is able to, and putting you in the, you know, explicit thoughts of a character and how they're interpreting various events and social phenomena from their perspective is what makes literature unique. And so I think all various forms of media are great at exposing viewers and readers to worlds that are unfamiliar to them, but literature is unique in the empathy aspect.
Now, about this empathy, just quote, how did you find the balance in your novel? Because it, you describe something very hard, but at the same time, you are not getting, the tone is not getting dramatic. How did you find the balance with very poetic parts and very deep or deep parts also? How did you manage your writing and your building?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, because it's difficult to find that balance, especially when dealing with such dire situations, you know, and it's hard but I think the main thing to find that particular balance was to first focus on the humanity of each of these characters and not rely necessarily on stereotypes at all, but give these characters, you know, very human qualities in terms of being imperfect, of being flawed, and not trying to, you know, for example, there's quite a bit of drug use, and the addiction plays a part in the story, but these aren't the factors that necessarily define these characters. These are just components of their lives. And my goal, I hope I succeeded, was to avoid any kind of moralization. I didn't want to put any judgment from my perspective of the writer, but to simply present the reader with these characters and situations in a way that, you know, the prose is poetic in terms of giving a sense of the texture of the life, but without providing any commentary from the narrator's perspective on how a reader should feel about this. You know, the reader can make the judgments and feel how they want about these characters, because, you know, I've seen not professional reviews, but the reviews on the internet from regular readers. And it's funny to see how, you know, some people think it's a tragedy. Other people think, oh my God, this Henry character, he's such an idiot. You know, he just needs to get a job. And, you know, he's so irresponsible, you know? And I mean, these are Americans probably, but, you know, it's fascinating to see how people react, because I did avoid as much as possible to provide my own, you know, very left-wing opinions on, you know, the American situation.
Yes, as a reader, because I read it as a reader, not as a professional reader, but yeah. I felt that your Henry was a character. He was somebody we could meet, and there was no point in your writing where I could find a little bit of, I don't know, despising, nothing.
Yeah.
Just we readers have to make our own opinion and see what we think about this human that you describe as a human, a father, a son, a man who is quite lost, actually, just simply. And after, we may hate him or we may like him or feel empathy. It depends.
Yeah. But it's, and what? That's very, for me, this is very touching praise, because I would feel embarrassed. I would feel like I had failed as a writer if readers weren't feeling a little conflicted. You know, if there were no debate about what type of a character Henry was, then I failed. But to see that there is so many, because that's just like every human being, you know, you have your friends and you have, you know, the people, your enemies, right? We can't please everybody. And that's just a reflection of our own complexity as individuals. And so I'm really, I'm thank you for that. That's very nice praise.
How about your writing? What is a little bit your writing profile? How did you build your style? Did you follow some creative writing courses? Or
yeah, you know, I writing came a bit later to me in life, in the professional sense, because you know I didn't grow up in circumstances where writing was really an option. I had to make money. I had to, you know, pay for life. And so writing doesn't do that, at least not in America. And so I don't know where in the world it does, but it's
question.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. So it took me, it wasn't until my mid-20s that I decided, you know, I'm going to give it a shot, because I was working as a teacher and translator in Madrid, you know, through my 20s, and you know, I loved it. I Madrid is still my second home, and I would love to return to live one day, but we'll see. But I wasn't feeling totally fulfilled, because writing was the only thing I was passionate about. And so I decided, okay, whatever, I'll try it, I'll go for it. And so I was accepted to the writing program at Columbia University in New York. And that's where I live now. And that was it really made me take it seriously for the first time. I had, you know, some small publications, a few short stories and very little literary magazines, but, you know, studying writing in a very serious, rigorous environment taught me things that I never would have learned otherwise. I think I was very much an amateur in terms of what I was writing, without having studied the craft. And so that opportunity, you know, changed my life and changed my craft. And because of that, I was able to finally write Abundance after I graduated.
Oh, yes. You wrote this book just after you graduated?
I did. I always envisioned myself as a short story writer. I love the form of the short story. I can't wait. I always have small projects going even while I'm working on a novel. And so that idea, the initial idea for Abundance of, you know, the money for chapters, I thought that was going to work as a short story. And so until I decided to run with it and let it open up to new areas, that's when I decided to write it a novel. And even then, I was nervous. I was like, I don't know if I'm capable to do a big book, you know, or a full book, you know. So, but it worked, I guess. Somebody, you know, people are reading it, so I got lucky.
And you still write short stories and plan to still write short stories and not only novels, maybe?
Yeah, I've been working on two novels right now. But anytime I take, you know, when I take a break from the novels to, you know, ask my friends to read and collect some criticism, for my next round of edits, I begin writing a short story, you know? And so I have all, there's always an idea. And so, yes, I do. I still continue to write short stories, but right now the priority is to finish these two new novels. But I'll always be writing short stories, and I hope after these two novels, I'll be able to publish an anthology.
Yeah, that would be great.
yeah. And knock on wood, I gotta find.
And you are writing two novels at the same time. It's quite unusual, maybe.
I think it was an accident. Yes, but actually, what happened was, like I was describing, I was taking a break from this larger first novel, and waiting for feedback from some friends, and I was taking a break and working on a short story, and a short story became another novel. And it's a small one. It's like a little novella, we would say, like about 100, 120 pages. But the other one is like really big.
So, two opposites at the same time.
Exactly. Oh boy.
And to finish, my last question would be, who are your favorite and inspiring figures, and especially writers?
Oh, wow. Figures. I have the answer ready for the writers. When I think about the key figures of my writing influences, I always point to, James Baldwin, Toni Morrison, Vladimir Nabokov, Franz Kafka, and Don DeLillo. Those are like the five writers that I always return to. If I'm reading something boring or bad or just, I'm not pleased with, I just always return to these writers. And as far as figures, part of my research, but right now I think somebody I would point to as a figure that I admire is Huey P. Newton. I've been reading Revolutionary Suicide, and he was, one of the founding fathers of the Black Panthers in the 1960s. And to see somebody who is both a brilliant writer. I mean, my God, is he just a beautiful writer? So both an artist and intellectual, but very proactive and militant activist on the street and organizing. That's something that I don't do. I'm not in the streets. I'm not active in this sense. I'm just the artist alone and in my room, trying to, say something, but he's really doing something. And I have such tremendous respect and admiration for activists. And he's somebody in, of the American tradition where, the battles that he was fighting persist to this day. And I think that's a figure that I can point to as a better man than me.
Well, that's a big plan.
Yeah, I know. You have to set your sights up there. Yeah. It's important to stay humble.
And thank you for this interview. And I hope Abundance will have all the press it deserves. And hope we French readers read you again and soon in French.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful reception so far. And thank you to you and all of your readers. This is such a privilege to be invited. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you.